Welcome back to Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. I'll continue my conversation with Chef BJ Dennis, also known as the Gullah Chef, because of his specialty in traditional Southern foods. Let's jump back into my conversation with Chef BJ. I want to shift over a little bit because, I mean, I love all of our conversation, everything about the food, because I know you and Doc Bill have some friends that you all are very close with, and you all are doing a lot of things that it's not just only the cooking the food, but you guys are growing, you know, working with people that are growing it too.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You can't talk about the food without talking about the agriculture. I mean, without agriculture, you don't have no food. You ain't fitting under nobody's stove, no oven, no grill. You know, that's very, 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 very important. Well, you know, for me also, I grew up with agriculture.
Yeah.
Even in West Ashley, my parents had a small plot. My neighbors across the street had sugarcane. When they moved away, my West Indian neighbors who from St. Thomas, who were my connection to St. Thomas, who I mentioned earlier, where I lived at, they had a passion fruit vine growing on their fence. And we don't even realize a passion fruit grows wild in this area. It doesn't make it because there's nobody there to cultivate it, but it grows in this area. I'm the same with, you see in our ditches, all these elephant ears.
Yeah.
You know, in the West Indies, that's food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sure in the old days, our people were eating that also. So I'm definitely connected with a lot of people in the agriculture world. You know, Roland Chalmers, mm-hmm. who's become a great friend of mine with the rice culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, rice is something that I'm, you know, this is what, quote unquote, we're known for. Being rice eaters,
mm-hmm.
even though I also say that my grandfather always told me coming up that they didn't eat rice every day when he was younger. Rice was a special thing for a lot of us when they were living off the land,
yeah,
and didn't have access to the stores. They grew the rice. Rice was a Sunday dish. Saturday, wow. You went to the rice pond, got the rice, pounded it out, fanned it, all that good stuff for Sunday dinner. And if you grew enough rice, you had enough rice for throughout
the week. Put aside a little bit, yeah.
You know, rice is so important and to the fabric of the Lowcountry, especially in Charleston. There's families to this day that are still rich off rice. And I've been big on wanting to see us reclaim that narrative. And also understand that all rice ain't bad rice. The thing you get out the store is overly processed, bleached, commodity rice. There's nothing but starch. There's no protein level, no iron level, no nothing. I've connected with people like Roland Chalmers, who still, I think he's, I don't know, fourth, fifth generation rice farmer.
Yeah.
Glenn Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn would never publicly say it, but I'm going to say it. His connection to the Sea Islands because of his mother and what he knows, how his mother became part of that Sea Island culture. But his mother having to work alongside her former nanny during the Great Depression, she learned a lot, and Glenn has so much knowledge. These people have been instrumental in my growth, my development as a chef. At one point in Charleston, there was documented 100 different strains of rice being grown. That's mind blowing.
Yeah, because people just think rice is rice.
You know, and at one point, our indigenous rice is from West Africa. You know, we're illegal for us to even grow. And sometimes in the Lowcountry, there were laws against you growing that weedy rice, which mm-hmm. is the red rice. I mean, the story of rice is amazing. I mean, I was in Trinidad, been 5 years now, 4 years, searching for Glabarima, which is one of the oldest strains of rice from West Africa, and connected with a gentleman named Francis Maureen, who knew about the story of people who repatriated from mainly Butler Island, Georgia, back to Trinidad. During the War of 1812, they got their freedom for fighting with the British.
Mm-hmm.
We went out there. And for me, it wasn't about... We saw the rice, but it wasn't the same rice. It was already kind of naturally... what's the word I'm looking for? When the strains kind of mix naturally. People like to say genetically modified.
Oh, yeah, like...
But vegetables do that naturally. So we think the rice has strains of Glabarima in it. But the amazing thing was, here's this group that they're called Americans, short for Americans, in the hills of Trinidad, still growing rice, still growing benne, stuff that was culturally relevant that they brought with them.
Over there.
And we're not saying that there wasn't already rice being grown in Trinidad. There's probably already rice being grown in Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that this group who have connections to the low country and still were living in areas they call fourth company, fifth company, sixth company, named after the folks that they fought with, were still growing this rice. So, yeah, so, you know, just getting us understanding the different varieties of collard greens and the nuances between the different types of collard greens. There's some collard greens, like the cabbage collard. You could take it, pull off the stem and put your finger in it. Just cracks. That collard green doesn't even take more than 10 minutes to cook. And it's tender. You know, so understanding these different nuances, understanding there were also older varieties of collards that took an hour to for it to get tender, for it to break down. All the varieties of peas, you know, the different types of corn, you know, that were culturally relevant to this area that was important in our dishes. You know, we so used to commodity this, commodity that, when we don't understand that the agricultural ways and the different things we used to do with these ingredients, you know, have been so lost.
Yeah. That's really true. I mean, we were talking about collard greens. It's an incredible story. I mean, collard greens are to the people on the coastal areas as tomatoes are to the Italians.
Yes.
I mean, the collard green plant is actually from Europe.
That's right.
Collard greens will grow in snow.
That's right.
There's no snow in sub-Saharan Africa. But yet, with that, they took it in, and black people on the coastal areas made it their own and made it to something that has become synonymous with that culture and that type of cooking.
Yes. Well, we don't understand how important green... Well, and I think it's also because greens were so important to us culturally. When you were in West Africa, they are eating sweet potato leaves. The greens off of the pea plants. Pumpkin leaves. You know, all these different greens. So when our people were brought here, first of all, they had to figure out what was going to sustain here. I mean, collards do well because we get winters here. I mean, to me, collard greens don't get really good until that frost hit them. The mustard greens, turnip greens. But we also forgetting about the lost stuff, the wild greens, the amaranth in the fields, the pokeweed, okra leaves. You know, I take okra leaves and cut them up and stew them down. You taste just like okra without the slime.
Yeah.
You know, when you study West Africa, it's got to be over 40, 50 varieties of leaves, leafy greens that they eat. And that's why we love collards. We have to understand we love certain things because some things were in us. And we need to get back to wanting to eat. Open our minds is not saying I just eat this collard green. This is our ancestral cooking. We took what we had and we made it work. We understood if I got oysters right now, I need to supplement that oysters with some type of vegetable in it. You know? And that's when we go back to the nuances of differences.
Yeah.
You know, somebody up here might cook cabbage with turnips in it. Right. Some people might want to cook cabbage with rutabaga. Somebody might take that cabbage and put shrimp in it.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Just no one way.
Yeah.
Stew pot, one pot cooking is what you had and what's there.
You had to make do with it. And that's the saying over here on Sapelo. You know, it's like, you know, you make do with what you have.
That's right.
But, you know, what I'm thinking about also, too, as I hear what you're saying there, is that I'm really glad and pleased to hear that you are exposing, you know, people to, you know, these kind of heritage recipes and ways to prepare things. Because for so often, people grow up liking what it is they were exposed to, and they don't want to venture outside of that.
Right.
And until they are introduced to something or, you know, someone kind of pushes a plate over to them and says, you know, well, why don't you try this? You know, they just kind of stick with the same thing. And so often it is process this or process that. So to, you know, to have you, you know, with people that, you know, are getting the knowledge and everything too, with what you share on social media and the things that you're doing and the project that you're working on, I think it's going to be really good for, you know, for exposing people to more than just, you know, what they maybe grew up eating.
Right. I hope so. That's the goal. So I come in very grateful, very humble. How can I help?
Yeah.
And that's what I always will be about. That's how I grew up. My parents always told me this. Don't depend on the government and be there for your people, good, bad, or ugly.
BJ, how can people find you? I know you're on social media. Do you have a website? How can people find you?
So no website right now, but you can find me on social media, obviously on Instagram at Chef BJ Dennis. I think Instagram is probably my biggest platform. Facebook business page, Chef BJ Dennis. Email if you ever want to inquire about any catering. Email is Benjamin Dennis the fourth was Benjamin Dennis, capital I, capital V, at Gmail. You can look me up on social media, and that's where I'll be.
Thanks for joining me and Doc Bill and our guest, Chef BJ. Now, if you would like to plan a trip to Charleston, visit the website explorecharleston.com. And we'll see you in 2 weeks for another great adventure here on Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Bye-bye.